The conference committee for Senate File 2790 and House File 3382 will come back to order. We are going to try to, I think a lot of work has been done while we've been in recess. So, Representative Lesh, what I would like to do is I'd like to kind of go back to the beginning of the bill and starting with section one. Do you have an amendment? There's an amendment. Members, before we had said that we were going to have some people look at the language, I believe on R19? R21. R19, right? Or is it R21?
Well, we passed Senate 19 and Senate.
This is the language relating to delinquency record or adjudication delinquency record. And so,
Madam Chair?
Ms. Backus?
Yeah, we were working with Mark Hasse, and after looking at all of the sections and all the differences between the Senate and the House regarding adjudication delinquency record versus delinquency record, the changes he was recommending are actually to provision we've already adopted, first of all, would be R21, the House language that was adopted on page, on House line 15, I'm sorry, yeah, page 15.18, where it says delinquency, you would delete that and say insert juvenile, and then make the same change on House line 15.29. And then for the other sections,
R21. Members, are you following? We're on page R21. Looking at House language. So at line 15.18, or delinquency, that new language, delete delinquency and insert juvenile. And then line 15.29, delete delinquency and insert juvenile. Ms. Backus?
Madam Chair, and then those would be the changes, and then the recommendation would be to take the Senate language in the other cases where there's a discrepancy between delinquency record and adjudication delinquency record.
Okay. So, Representative Lesh moves reconsideration of the vote by which the conference committee adopted House Section 6. Any discussions? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed say no. Motion prevails. Representative Lesh moves the amendment to House Section 6 on line 15.18, delete delinquency and insert juvenile. On line 15.29, delete delinquency and insert juvenile. Any discussions?
Madam Chair.
Senator Latz?
How about line 15.10 on R20? Same issue?
We will come back to that.
It's also part of Section 6.
Yep. Madam Chair, and those, after meeting with Mr. Hasse, those were the only two changes that was recommended. The other uses were fine.
We should hear from Mr. Hasse if that was just missed or if that's something that should remain.
We could hear from Mr. Hasse. I understand from counsel that the reason why we're making these changes is that in different places it would have to be worded differently. And so if you want to, Mr. Hasse, do you want to just come to the table and let us know if that's the case? Just for the record.
Madam Chair, Mark Hasse, with the Council on Crime and Justice. As Mr. Backus said, I met with him, went over these. We discussed in detail what should be changed for the purpose of expanding this, you know, what for the original intent without changing too much. I also spoke with the County Attorneys Association, and they were fine with these changes. So,
on Representative Lesh's motion, any further discussions? Senator Lacks?
Madam Chair, I'm still not clear on line 15.10, and I also noticed delinquencies used on 15.23. Mr. Hazy is saying that those descriptions as delinquency records rather than juvenile records is the intended language?
Yes, Senator Lax.
Thank you.
So, Mr. Hazy and counsel and the county attorneys have gone through the bill looking at places where there's delinquency record, and they would like, instead of the adjudication delinquency record, they prefer the Senate language everywhere else, except in this area, is to insert juvenile for delinquency. So on Representative Lesch's motion, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed say no. Motion prevails. Then Mr. Backus, why don't you walk us through, so does that take us, should we go back to R19?
Madam Chair, members, I believe that's correct. The Senate lines 19.17 to 25.25 would be one example where you'd want to take the Senate language. You wouldn't want to take that whole section yet because there's one outstanding issue on the next page, but you'd want to take the other provisions in there.
Representative Lesch moves Senate language in section 20, line 19.17 through 19.25. Any discussions? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed say no. Motion prevails. And then which other sections, Mr. Backus?
Madam Chair, members, on page R21, you could take the entire section 23 because that's the only issue there.
Representative Lesch moves adoption of Senate language section 23. Any discussions? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed say no. Motion prevails.
And Madam Chair, on page R22, Senate lines 21.25 to 21.28. Again, that's a section that has more than one provision in it, so you'd want to take those and leave the other issue to be decided later.
Ms. Backus, repeat that?
It would be on page R22, Senate, line 21.25 to 21.30.
I would make that motion, Madam Chair.
On Representative Lesch's motion, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed say no. Prevails. Any other areas?
Madam Chair, I believe those are the areas.
Lesch, should we go back to section 1?
Yes, we should.
All right. Members, this is Senator Dill's amendment to the Senate bill on the floor, and I'd like to hear Senator Dill and ask him to talk about this.
Madam Chair, members, I do have some more of these handouts that I passed out this morning if anybody needs them. Madam Chair, members, this morning I discussed this a little bit in terms of how I got into this issue in the first place with these two families that ran into Snag and Glencoe. What I didn't have time to do this morning was discuss some of the things I learned at the William Mitchell College of Law last summer when I attended a meeting on this subject. And there was three things that startled me. One was a Latino boy that got up and talked about a mistake that he made when he was 10 or 11 years old. He did something to some younger sibling in the family. I never found out what it was. But he became a registered sexual predator at age 11. And spent his time going up to Curtis Falls, Minnesota, very afraid to interact with his friends, stay overnight with them, and so on. But he did become a very good football player and was elected the homecoming team in his class. But then he graduated and was trying to find a place to go to college, and he was continually being rejected. He had his probation officer with him. His woman had been his probation officer for 7 years, and he appeared to be about 20 years old or so. Anyway, he was rejected college after college after college, rejected him. He finally decided to confront a North Dakota college that had rejected him and asked them to please let me get in and, you know, give me a second chance. And so forth. This college relented and changed their mind and decided to let him in. and he turned out to be a star running back for the football team and was doing well in school and so forth. But when you put somebody in this situation, it's like an albatross around their neck for perhaps the rest of their life. Well, after he got done telling his story, then this group was attorneys and probation officers and other interested citizens of professionals and so forth, counselors that were at this meeting. And somebody got up and said, well, in my area, I've got the captain of the football team at my local high school was dating a sophomore cheerleader, and they got into a sexual relationship, and there was more than 3 years difference in their age. And now he's a registered sex offender, and he's got this felony issue to deal with. And then somebody else got up and said, well, the valedictorian of our high school class, a girl, got into a relationship with a 15-year-old boy, and now she's a registered sex offender. And these kids have got perfect records. There's nothing wrong with it. They just happen to fall in love with somebody or got into a sexual relationship for whatever reason. And it's affecting the rest of their life. So I came away from that meeting thinking we had to do something. Now, last year I had a bill which was more comprehensive that Ken Bogus helped me put together. It was a bill that really cut it off at 48 months and not 36 months like I've got in this bill, but it also provided some language that gave the judge more discretion to make judgment based on whether it's a consensual relationship, how long the relationship is going on, is it a dating relationship, how does the family feel about it? Are the mother and father, the kids, are they supportive and so forth? And give the judge a little more discretion. Well, we had a hearing on that last year, and this year, when we got to the end of the day, we decided to do something that was simple and very understandable, and that would just simply take the 24 months, expand it to 36 months. I did some research on this, and I know that on the handout I've got here, the research goes back to 2003, so it's not overly current. But what I did is I went through the 50 states and showed what they did in different states. And since it's so different from state to state, I took the 25 states that seemed to have the same system we had, for the most part, and identified what the difference in age had to be before it was considered statutory rape. And that's what I've got listed here on the front page of this document. And you'll see that 4 years is the most common number that you'll see there. The range is 2 to 10 years, but there was only two other states that were at 2 years like Minnesota was. So what I want to do is just to cut this deal off at 36 months. We'll try to give people a little more latitude. And I also would like to have these kids know what the rules are. My impression from talking to teenagers and others, and I've had 4 kids of my own, including one now that's 32 years old, and I asked him about this, whether he knew about this 2-year rule and so forth. And it's hard for me to believe that we can round up these kids and put an albatross around their neck for the rest of their life without telling them what the rules are ahead of time. So the first part of this amendment has to do with including information during a sex education class on what the rules are so that at least they know what the 2-year difference is. And if it's going to be 3 or whatever it is, they should know what that is. Because in the 2 cases that I had in Glencoe, the difference in age was just a little beyond 2 years and 2 months or 2 years and 2 weeks. So it was very close. And it caused just an awful lot of trauma. Now, the registered nurse who had a son that got crossways with the situation, what happened to him is that he became a registered sex offender for 10 years. And he made the mistake of moving from one house in Glencoe to another house in Glencoe, same telephone number, same town, and so forth. They didn't tell a probation officer that he moved. And so then his 10 years started all over again. He already went into it 3, 4, 5 years, so then the 10 years started over again. And what was really hard on this kid is he used to hunt with his dad, but he couldn't hunt with his dad anymore because he was a felon, couldn't have a rifle or shotgun. He wanted to go fishing with his dad to Canada. He couldn't get into Canada because he had this albatross, this felony conviction, he was a registered sex offender. And it just seems like it's overkill. These kids are mixing together from sophomore, junior, senior, or maybe something like freshmen are in there. They're all mixing together in the same classes and same social situation. And my legislative assistant who's sitting behind me here talked about all the freshman girls she knew who were dating senior boys. It happens that way. And if they get into a sexual relationship and the boy turns 18 first and the girl is still 15, they can get into a lot of trouble. Now, at the back end of this document, which I handed out, there's six pages of occupations that are listed here that you can't have if you've been a convicted felon. And when you start looking at that list, I mean, you can't be a school bus driver, you can't be a horse race jockey, you can't even curry a horse at the racetrack, you can't be a property manager, you can't be someone who sells gambling devices, you can't be a private detective, you can't be a collection agent, you can't be a licensed retail seller of liquor, you can't be all kinds of things. Now, I think it was last year, or the Senate last had a bill that said that when these kids are entering their freshman year in college, we have to let them know what they can't do. If they're going to convict a felon, did that pass? Yeah, so it did pass. So at least we're telling these kids what they can't do if they're a convicted felon, but maybe we ought to tell them what they can't do before they get into the problem and get them educated so they know what the consequences are of some of this stuff. So I'm trying to make a change here to provide young people with better information as to what the law is and also to provide a little more flexibility in there, a little more wider. I really like to go to 4 years is what I like to do, but we're going to try 3 and sell it, see how that works out. And then give them some hope. Because when you get into this kind of a rut, you can't get a job, you can't find a place to live, you can't get into the college that you want to go to. Maybe you've dreamed all your life of being a chiropractor, like Dr. Abler, right? You dream of being a chiropractor, and then you fall in love with a 15-year-old girl and get crossways with the law. It's all goofed up for you. So,
Senator Dill, I think Representative Hillstrom has a question.
Did the Education Committee look at this discussion or this mandate that we teach kids about it? Because Mindy Browning and I had a conversation on the House floor. She doesn't like education pieces being put in anybody else's bill. And so, was there a fiscal note? Because anytime they mandate anything,
well, Representative Hillstrom, obviously this language didn't go through the committee process because this was a floor amendment based on a bill that Senator Dill had heard in committee last year, but was struggling to find a way to simplify it and to move it forward. But I believe the floor debate on the amendment, the Education Committee chairs were there and in the Senate, and I don't recall that there was any objections.
Madam Chair, the way it worked is that the amendment was divided into two parts. And the first part dealt with the education component because that was deemed the least controversial. We had a voice vote on the Senate floor. Nobody suggested that the Education Committee see it or anything like that. It passed without opposition. And then we had the part on the going from 24 to 36 months. And that was more controversial. And if that passed on the with 39, it was 43 to 20. And out of the 43 yes votes to go to 36 months, there were 4 Republicans and 39 Democrats that supported that change. And as a Republican, I was hoping to do a little better than that, but that's the best I could do. I had to depend on Democrats to get it passed.
Representative Hillstrom? Thank you, Madam Chair. Has there been discussions with the governor's office on if this puts a nice big red bold on it?
Madam Chair, Representative Hillstrom, I've had one or two or three, I think it's at least 2 conversations with Brian LaFleur and 1 conversation with Chris DeLaForest, and neither one of them said that the governor would definitely veto this thing if this was in there. Chris DeLaForest would listen to me but said very little. Brian LaFleur was suggesting that if the governor doesn't like to loosen things up because he got battered by Democrats on the Boucher-Dean issue and he wanted to protect himself. But my answer to the governor on this is that you're worried about someone getting out and killing somebody, or raping them and so forth. How many kids are killing themselves because it went into this trap. And if you look at the first letter I've got in here on this document, it's from a distraught mother whose son is an outstanding athlete, captain of the hockey team, who's active in church, he's volunteered for all kinds of mission trips and helping the Red Cross, and he's on the student council, the principal's award. He's an electrical engineering student, I believe, and some college, and his mother's talking about killing himself because he's now a registered sex offender. He doesn't believe that's who he is, just because he got mixed up with a 15-year-old girl, and in his case, it was two 15-year-old girls, so I just think that we're doing something very bad to these children. And what's so wrong, what is so bad about love? If they were out there beating these women to a pulp and pinning them to the ground and raping them, yeah, that's another matter, but this is a consent. They say you can't give consent until you're 16. But we all know how this goes. We have very mature 15-year-old girls and very immature, socially, emotionally immature 15-year-old young men. And things happen. We know if you look at the statistics, the sexual activity rate in these high schools is pretty high at different age groups and so forth. Things are happening out there, and to say to these people that for the rest of your life you're not going to be able to be a chiropractor, you can't be a guy that shovels the manure at the racetrack, you can't be I can't understand why we wouldn't let them be detectives. Because if you have some experience with the criminal justice system as a crook, you'd probably make a pretty good detective. But at any rate, there's an albatross around your neck. And I want these kids to be good, productive citizens, to get on with their life, to have some hope. And if you don't have hope and you get depressed, suicide is an option. If Polanyi is fetal something like this, we should probably kill him some people.
Well, members, let's take, I think Senator Dill brought both sections of his amendment into the conversation. I guess I'd like to take us back to just looking at just section one. And then we can move on to talk about the other provision with respect to the age difference. Section one is just the, in addition to all the other things in sex ed, it's, I think, pretty simple instructions to inform the children about the potential criminal consequence as a result of relationships where there's an age gap. And so, Representative Baker.
Well, thanks, Madam Chair. There's a couple parts of this bill that seem so reasonable to a lot of us that have been impossible to get done. And, people that have had 15 years ago did some, not even a fence as high a bar as the one we're talking about, can't get their set aside anymore because it's been actually here in 2005. We've been trying to rescue a lot of those folks for the last 5 years. I use the word reason doesn't seem to work. But I do want to just talk to you about a pragmatic reality. Even on the first section, which seems reasonable enough to me, the minute you open up the sex ed class discussion, it attracts a lot of interest. So many people, for fear of what else it might involve, Bob Tracy's here. We don't agree on the topic, but we're involved in the same room on the same topic as a, like an endless discussion point. Attempting to find some compromise that everybody can agree with and all the different groups that have an interest in. Mentioning the topic draws attention. And, to me that seems like a kind of a sensible paragraph. Other people may disagree, it seems to me if you adopt this, I think it would be sensible for you to go talk to whoever you can in the governor's office and see what he thinks about even something as minor as this. Never mind your 24 to 36 month question. Because I think you'll find on the second question that there's a great deal of disinterest in changing that I would predict. But I haven't talked to him about that specifically, and that would be sensible to you. And I would also ask him right there about this section. So you have a firm opinion, they might give you a firm opinion. It seems like if you ask the question, they ask, but not on the specific thing. That would be my advice.
Representative Abler, again, I think that they know that we're having this discussion. They know that the provision comes before us. I think that as a committee, we certainly want to work with the executive branch, but I haven't heard anything, and I think what I'd like, the way that I'd like to proceed, and I think Representative Lesh may or may not agree with me, I think he does, that why don't we just process the bill and do the work we need to do, but there's plenty of time. If there's some concerns raised by the governor's office, I think that they'll contact us, and I think that we're pragmatic enough that we would reconsider, given, you know, that scenario. But if we don't act on it, then I don't know that they would have an incentive to tell us either way, and we might miss an opportunity. Maybe they don't object to it, and we might miss an opportunity by not acting.
So, Madam Chair, we do have time.
Yeah.
It isn't like it's the last day.
Right.
If I can, Madam Chair. And I agree with that. I don't see anyone in the governor's office here, but that's part of my concern. I mean, the Supreme Court reiterated today that we both have our roles and we have to play them, and our role is passing this, and especially when we don't have anyone here, we got to do what we got to do. I will say this, in terms of our legislative role, I have not spoken with Representative Greiling about it, about her concerns. And from my perspective, for example, the education piece seems to be relatively innocuous, although I know everyone cringes when you start talking about messing with curriculum. That said, this thing, this statutory rape, quote unquote, thing, is something that everyone thinks they know about, but no one really does. People assume they know who you can be and who you can't be sexually active with when you're in high school, and that's why I think it would be uniquely important. There's a lot of rumors floating around high schools about what's against the law and what's not. And in Minnesota, because of our varying levels, I think it makes it kind of important. That said, I haven't talked to Representative Greiling about it. So,
Madam Chair, Representative Hillstrom, thank you, Madam Chair. I did speak with Representative Greiling, and Representative Greiling will be requesting a fiscal note should this go to her. She prefers that education provision, especially about things like sex ed and mandates, go through the education.
Noted. Senator Dill, do you want to hold off or do you want to move Section 1 and see if we can?
Well, Madam Chair, members, it's a little hard for me to believe it's going to cost that much. The section of law that we're dealing with here is talking about going through a public process to put together a curriculum that's appropriate for the local schools, and there's some list of things that it needs to be included. But it's a little hard for me to believe that it's going to cost that much to say if you're more than 36 or 24 months difference in age between you and your partner, and one of you happens to be over 18 and the other is under 15, it's a very serious felony. You can have a lifetime of misery if you make this mistake. And I think they should also know, which is totally unfair as far as I'm concerned, but if you're just a little bit less than 2 years of disability, it's not considered a crime. If you're just a little bit more than 2 years, it's a felony. It's a very steep cliff. And how much does it cost to tell kids about that? It just can't cost that much.
Madam Chair, can I suggest this?
Representative Lesh?
Senator Dill, I wonder if set this aside for now and see if you can talk to Representative Greiling and explain what your thrust is and report back when we next convene and see what she says. I know that I am going to defer strongly to my House Education Finance Chair. So if you can reach comity with her, it would alleviate any concerns I have.
Okay, well, Madam Chair, I've had quite a bit of contact with Amy Greiling over the years, and I feel like my relationship with her is good, and I'd be happy to discuss it with her and bring her a report back.
Thank you.
we'll set that aside. Let's see. We've already dealt with, so we're now on to section 2 and 3, and the other sections of the bill. This is the Senate language that is identical to Representative Mulery's House File 2707 that is now on the House floor. And provisions, sections 2 and 3 would also, if we adopt that, then there's a number of other sections that would be adopted along with that. Representative Lesh?
Sorry, where are we again, Madam Chair?
Section 2 and 3.
Okay. Oh.
Representative Champion said he had to go talk to a couple of
okay.
people.
All right.
So, can somebody?
Okay. That's fine. If you want to just go.
Can staff try to get him that we're going to do something that we're onto his issue, and see if he'll come back. Representative Lesh, what are you thinking on these provisions?
Well, I guess on this Senate section 2, 3, 5, 11 to 13, and 25 to 26, I just spoke with Nancy Haas about that. And I honestly, for myself, I can't speak for House conferees, but I need additional information on this. Obviously, it has not passed the House floor. It passed through Civil Justice and Public Safety in the House, but and this is Mulery's House File 2707. I want to know more about it because there's a lot of details in here. I just on the summary, I have 6 different points relating to licensing of juvenile facilities, DNA, and firearms. So. I want to have a more thorough committee discussion on this, if we can, Madam Chair.
All right. Ms. Haas? Are we ready to move on? Maybe we'll hold off on this, if you or do
no,
you need
no.
more time?
I need just a couple minutes and a little bit more time.
House conferees would like to hear a little bit more about Senate File 2788, House File 2707.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Conference Committee members. My name is Nancy Haas with Messerly & Kramer here on behalf of the Minnesota County Attorneys Association. House File 2707 was a bill introduced by Representative Mulery, and the County Attorneys Association, after reviewing it as introduced, had some concerns with the way it was drafted, and so we asked for some changes, and I'm going to let Mr. Cedergren here walk through what our concerns were and what the language now looks like and why it looks the way it does. And then there is also an amendment that I'd like to discuss with you that Representative Mulery had drafted, and we'll walk through that with you as well. That reflects some more additional conversations.
Mr. Cedergren?
Thank you, Madam Chairman. First of all, what I'd like to say is as we were approached to take a look at this problem of stays of adjudication versus adjudication and the collateral consequences that the effect of that decision would have on juveniles. We made an effort to protect public safety wherever we felt we could, yet at the same time attempted to protect those individuals deserving of protection from those harsh collateral consequences, some of which Senator Dill had mentioned previously. And to that end, we came up with a plan that would allow, among other things, to extend what is called the juvenile stay of adjudication from a period of 6 months to 90-day sessions to a single 180-day session, but with prosecutor approval that we would be able to run a child up to the statutory limit of jurisdiction in juvenile court, which is age 19. And where this really started coming alive for us is in some of the areas of the criminal sexual conduct cases where the consensual sexual contact offenses, for instance, if we had a young person that was in the situation similar to what Senator Dill is describing, is that individual really a predator that needs to register? Or is this a person that did get involved in a situation that likely he shouldn't have gotten involved in or she shouldn't have gotten involved in but did anyway? And whether or not that individual is in need of a long-term form of sexuality therapy, outpatient treatment, or some other form of therapy. And what we ran into is with the six-month limit on stays of adjudication for juveniles, frequently that was not enough time for the professionals to do the job that they needed to do with a young person in sex offender treatment or sexuality therapy, whatever that would be. And to that end, the only alternative for the court at the end of that six-month period of time would be to address a probation violation for that young person, which the court would then either have to pursue, and if the child was found in violation for not completing the terms of the stay, which was successful completion of treatment, we would have to adjudicate that young person, and they would have to register as a sex offender for those felony crim sex cases. And so we tried to come up with an alternative that would allow for those children that it warrants to stretch that stay of adjudication period out to give them an opportunity to get the proper treatment necessary, recommended by the professionals, without having to adjudicate them. And that's where the whole concept came up about extending the stays of adjudication. It does also affect other types of crime, not just the crim sex crimes, but that was the most urgent issue that we were dealing with, in part because of that collateral consequence of having to register as a sex offender. Now, those individuals that needed to be registered as a sex offender, the court still has the opportunity to do a adjudication of delinquency upon a finding of guilt or an admission of guilt. So,
Representative
Abel? As long as you're on that, which is kind of a tangential way to get at the Senator Dill piece. But so the story is, you said this, there's a lot of tales about interesting and tragic, you know, whatever. I mean, they're 2 years and 2 months apart, and if you get married, they actually live 40 years together or whatever, you know, they worked out. And here the guy is a sex offender. Is there, I mean, you have a choice as an attorney, to call the attorney to decide to charge or not charge based upon your view of the case at the time, right? So you could choose to charge nothing or a lot. And so why would an attorney at the time charge some of those kids we heard the story about? How would they decide that was worth charging when it's so obviously not a big deal to other attorneys?
Well, I can tell you from my practice in Carver County, our prior county attorney insisted that if we had a CrimSex 3 and it was factually supported, probable cause, likelihood of success at trial, to charge that. Now, the consequence that came out of the backside of that in terms of stay of adjudication, continuance for dismissal, a lot of times was resolved through either plea negotiation or a decision was made by the court, regardless of the party's position on it. But you are also accurate in saying that there is some latitude that prosecution can take in a case. We could charge something as similar or as low, if you will, as a disorderly conduct, which is an act or behavior that raises alarm, anger, concern, or resentment in others. And I would guess that a parent in a circumstance like this might be the victim of that concern, alarm, or anger, all the way to that felony level offense. In some cases, you could pull your punch and say, okay, we're going to charge a fifth degree gross misdemeanor, which is not going to require registration because it is not a felony, and prove that there was a non-consensual contact or touch. Usually those things don't happen unless they're agreed upon by defense and prosecution. So we've actually tried to engineer some ways around the problem without actually dealing with the problem. the statute itself, and I think that's why we're here dealing with this today. So what we tried to do is tried to make some avenues for those kids that are deserving, the first-time offenders or the situations that, that warrant some latitude, yet at the same time protect public safety. So the litany of other subdivisions that are going to be addressed today, or sections that would be addressed today, you will notice that most of those really come back to, quote unquote, be the albatross on the, around their neck, will only come back if there's a subsequent offense. And that would hold true with using stays of adjudication in EJJ or certification factors, those public safety factors, the DNA. The one area that I see that it really doesn't affect a that could affect a first-time offender rather than a subsequent offender is this whole area of the firearm possession. And because of the way the statutes are set up, and because of the seriousness of using a firearm in a crime and the need for public safety, that is the one area that at least our group decided we needed to step outside of protecting that first-timer, if you will, because of the seriousness of the offense and the fact and the belief that a victim should not have to, there shouldn't have to be a second victim before we do something to restrain that individual from having a gun. That is the one area that we decided we needed to hold firm on and say we need to have the, that firearm prohibition with stays of adjudication as well as adjudications.
Ms. Haas, is that the change in position? Because I do not recall, and I don't know if this happened in the House, but in the Senate, when this bill came up, I mean, it must not have come up because the language is identical with what's in here and what's in the House file that's on the floor. And is that what the amendment addresses?
Correct, Madam Chair.
So let's do we have the amendment? Because I'd like you to talk, speak to that, and then why don't we...
Do you know how to describe the 10-year? Okay. So
we all have the 814 amendment.
So if I could
speak to that issue and then talk to us about what how
sure.
What the 814 amendment does.
So, Madam Chair, after we tried to craft some language to deal with a person who had a subsequent violation that would we wanted to be triggered for a firearm possession and be able to charge them, we determined that we could not do that without a lifetime ban. And that was the lifetime ban was something that Representative Mullery felt very strongly that for a first-time offender that would not happen, as did the probation officer. So what we set back to work on is to craft something which you have in front of you, which basically says that for a person on a first-time stay of adjudication, you have a 10-year bar for a possession of a firearm. And so long as you have no other conviction related to a crime of violence after that 10-year period, you can possess a firearm in the future. So that was our attempt at trying to prohibit a lifetime ban, but at the same time put some time period in there and also require to be free of a crime of violence aside from 609.52, which is theft. Auto theft in the statute, which Representative Mueller didn't think was a crime of violence. So that's what the amendment does.
And Ms. Haas, Representative Mueller has seen this language, and he's okay with this language?
Yes, I will say, though, we did just look at it a couple minutes ago, and there is maybe a verbal amendment that I've given to Ms. Perius that would make this better, that it I would appreciate her reading if possible.
We just want some clarification here on how this is different than current law in terms of, so is it allowing someone to get their gun back after 10 years or making it longer compared to current law?
Madam Chair, current law is if you receive an adjudication for a crime of violence, you have a lifetime ban for the possession of a firearm. Under this scenario, for a person who receives a stay of adjudication, and we believe there will be many more stays of adjudication and not adjudications. And so to that extent, when it involves a crime of violence, we want a 10-year ban on the firearm possession so that we're not giving several options to someone who commits a crime of violence in getting to possess a firearm. Does that make sense? Did I say that right?
So the bill without this amendment would not would do away with the lifetime ban for the stays of adjudication. So without this amendment, people, the lifetime ban would no longer apply for stays of adjudication. But what the amendment does is that it brings the ban back to 10-year time.
It's, Madam Chair, it's actually the other way around. It would be a lifetime ban without the change.
Without the bill or the amendment?
With the bill as it's currently written, it would be a lifetime ban under a stay of adjudication. So with the amendment for a stay of adjudication, it would be a 10-year ban, providing no additional crimes of violence.
Well, Madam Chair, the stay of adjudication, under current law, if you stay the adjudication, is there a ban on the
firearm?
Madam Chair, no, there is not a ban under a stay of adjudication.
Under current law. And this would actually increase current law's penalty to get a 10-year ban.
It would be an increase from what it is now. Now, however, what we had suggested initially was, in order to protect public safety, that even stays should have that lifetime ban. And this was something that was not agreeable. And so we went back to the drawing table and started cutting it. And the way we came up with is a 10-year ban, and excluding that felony auto theft as a dangerous
just kind of thinking about getting a bill signed. So if you're going from less to more, that would be popular.
Representative Lesh.
Thank you. Mr. Senator, can you tell me, and you may have said this, but maybe I was reading, what's the frequency of stays of adjudication? And the reason I ask is I know in Ramsey County, I have never, ever done a stay of adjudication. So, and I don't know what they're like in other jurisdictions.
I can tell you that, Madam Chair, I can tell you that they are as varied as the 87 counties and the judges within the counties. I know of judges that will never adjudicate a child. I know of judges that will never do a stay of adjudication on a child. I can tell you in Carver County, there are cases that we try to find the just answer for, and we probably have a fairly good balance of stays of adjudication versus adjudications. But what we try to do is look and determine whether or not that six-month current period that is available for a juvenile, if that's going to be sufficient to, and I'll use the word rehabilitate, if it's going to be sufficient to rehabilitate that child so they're going to get the services that they need and we're not going to see them again. And what we found, at least with some of the more serious offenses, in particular the crim sex conduct cases, is that that six-month period was not enough.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Can I just ask bluntly, are you looking at doing this to get around the fact that folks have to register if they're adjudicated and that people won't charge or adjudicate because there's this heavy hanging registration over the head of these kids? That's what I'm really trying to figure out. What's the crux of why?
Well, Madam Chair and Representative Hillstrom, I think that we're responding to Representative Mullery's bill that would double the stay of adjudication time period. And so from the County Attorney's Association, our interest in fixing this language is as a result of his original bill. And so, you know, our changes reflect what we think under a doubling of the, or the opportunity to double the stay of adjudication up until the 19th birthday, that these additions would, in fact, support public safety. So, I mean, that's why we came to the table on this bill. But as far as why Representative Mullery introduced the bill, and Senator Moy, you'd have to ask them.
Thank you, Madam Chair. The only reason why I'm asking these questions is because I believe we have not yet had the debate on the House floor about this issue. We had it in committee, but there are, anytime you enter guns into the picture and sex offenders into the picture, it's always a lively debate on the House. And so one never knows where we might land.
Representative Hillstrom, were these questions not asked in the committee? And I don't know, were they discussing?
Well, this wasn't proposed. The gun issue wasn't part of the bill that was discussed So even though Tony Cornish, you know, is on my committee, and he would be the one who would tend to ask, you know, questions mostly about guns on my committee, he really wasn't alerted to this, I believe.
Well, Madam Chair, Representative Hillstrom, I believe the lifetime ban, the language was addressed in committee, and so I do believe that conversation. I
my committee and Representative Mueller's committee. I just don't remember, Madam Chair.
Yeah.
So
I don't remember if it was yours or Representative Mueller's, but this amendment, the amendment in the bill that's in the shape that it is right now, was done in its first committee.
No, you've got a very interesting delegate, and could we get this to become law and make something about a bit of a, something like that. On the other side, on the tough on crime side of it, I think that the 10-year thing was a point to nothing, and probably good. There's another player in the game, which is a National Gun Rights Organization. What do you think they're going to be? Are they going to be thinking that
curious, what would the verbal oral amendment be to the 14th Amendment?
Madam Chair, I just actually spoke with Mr. Brown, and I think the amendment can stay as is. He was putting in a cross-reference that actually already applies. So, thank you.
All right. Thank you.
Representative Lesh, what do you want to do with this stuff?
Senator, Madam Chair, I'm hesitant to move this. I'm concerned about going back to the House floor with something as loaded up as this. I'm trying to keep an open mind, and I understand your decision in moving forward on this as your omnibus bill. I'm trying to figure out how I sell this. And not having heard from Representative Mueller on this, it seems to me it would take a lot of time for him to explain to the rest of the body what this does, and then when he gets bogged down by questions about guns and et cetera, it seems like it would be a tough sell. I'm not ready to move on this right now.
Right,
I think it's
something
we still need to work through.
Let's move on.
To the merits of the bill, and you know, I'm going to hold on. It seems like to me that what you're trying to do, but this is your bill number. That the idea of trying to find another way to, you know, protect the safety and yet get safety valves and stuff is meritorious. So
well, the bill is on the House floor. Maybe Representative Mueller needs to take up that bill on the House floor and see where he's at on that. I don't intend to move the vehicle, the companion of Senate Bill. It's unfortunate. We don't have time, and so if Representative Mallory can find the time to take this up on the House floor or have a conversation with you on where you're comfortable. It's unfortunate that if we are not going to be able to do this, that's just it's too bad.
So,
what are you talking about moving his vehicle?
About moving his bill on the House floor? You all took 10 hours or so to debate another bill last night. I think it's just a timing issue for him. Is that, you know, I don't know if there's time.
But if the bill moves to the committee, it might not be. I'm just asking questions.
Right. Yeah, and I know. Yeah.
It just seems like you're trying to do something.
Yeah.
Going on. It needs to be a little flat.
All right, Representative Champion and Senator Latz, section 17, is it?
Yes. It is section 24.
Section 24.
Madam Chair. And I have Mr. David Brown, who's joined me at the podium. And, Your Honor, this is, Madam Chair, this is the language that we're going to talk about is what has been agreed upon by the Counties Association, as well as Hennepin County, and also Senator Latz.
Mr. Brown?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, thank you very much. The language we are looking at is, I guess we can use either that. I'm on page R21, and the issue we're talking about here, is a streamlined expungement process for low-level offenders that will allow them to not only get a diversion program, but have the prosecutor agree at the time they give the diversion to also expunge the record down the line if they remain crime-free. As a consequence of that, we wanted to make sure that, prosecutors and those making these decisions had streamlined access to those records. So if somebody had a sealed record from another county, the prosecutor would know that, whether it was an arrest or actually had a prior diversion. So we've really been working hard on language that accomplishes that and still protects the privacy rights of the individuals who have their records sealed. I want to thank Senator Latz, Representative Champion, and Mark Hasse from the Council on Crime and Justice for working so hard. This has been a very difficult issue, and I think we're all working very hard to get at the goal. Using the House language, which is the existing law, on page R21, line 16.14, we would strike through the words prosecution or sentencing, and then after the word order, I believe a comma, though I will certainly defer to Senate counsel as to how we should structure this. And then the following language. An expunged record may be opened upon request by a prosecutor or upon request by a probation officer for sentencing purposes without a court order. And for the committee members' knowledge, when the way these requests are made is actually an electronic request made to the BCA by a prosecutor's office, and what we get back is obviously an electronic response giving us the person's criminal record. The way the BCA works, the prosecutor who's requesting it actually has to fill out a form. What's the case name? What's the case number? You know, what's the reason for the request, so that the BCA is able to audit the requests that we make for their data, or one of our administrative assistants making that request. And so they do have an audited process. It prevents people from looking up criminal records for something other than legitimate purposes. So obviously all of the limitations imposed by the BCA would still apply to these requests. What we wouldn't be getting is ex parte court orders. I will tell you, from Hennepin County's perspective, using this streamlined expungement program, we expect there to be somewhere in the neighborhood of 600 of these in the next calendar year, where these are people we're giving diversions to now and would expect to give both the diversion and the expungement, where we can see that they would be eligible for that. And that's 600 people who don't have to hire lawyers to get an expungement. They don't have to pay the fees to get the expungement, because we're doing all of this at the same hearing. So the benefit to the people who are getting this is incredible. We have victim notification provisions in here. So I think it's really an attempt to balance both the interests of the defendants and the public safety in dealing with this issue.
Questions or discussion? Members, based on counsel's recommendation, instead of adding this language to print one, We're going to take this language and just create another section.
Madam Chair, someone behind me is wanting to speak.
I was in.
Okay. Okay, sit down. So then I just want to finish my thought on that. So this language, if we adopt it, will be another section, just that we don't, or another clause just for purpose of organization of the language. Ms. Neumeister.
Madam Chair, members of the conference committee, for the record, my name is Rich Neumeister. I just want to share with you at least some information that's important. These expungements are not just expungement records at the BCA. These are at this basically will allow streamlined access for prosecutors and probation officers when they do their sentencing with any expunged records held by any executive agency in the state of Minnesota. So that could be expunged police records, it could be expunged whatever. I'm just, because you're amending the general expungement statute, so I think that's important to know. It's not just the BCA. Secondly, in the proposed language, I would like to suggest by a documented request. So at least there's some way that it has to be a request. It can't be a phone call. It can't be whatever. Because you're going to have 87 counties with their probation officers possibly asking for this. You're going to be seeing county prosecutors asking for this. It could be city prosecutors. And now with the bill going to allow more possibility of expungement, you're going to have thousands of more expungements down the line, which means sealed. These are sealed records. Since 1996, generally, records are not destroyed. They're sealed. So I just wanted to share at least some information and my suggested language on that.
All right. Representative Champion, Senator Lacks. Mr. Neumeister, suggestion. This is your compromise language, so what do you want on that? Mr. Brown?
Madam Chair.
Senator Lacks.
Two thoughts. One is just as to the language itself, the Senate Council, but I suggest possibly in the additional language after the first word prosecutor, maybe you want to insert a comma, and then once you get to the probation officer sub clause after sentencing purposes, another comma, so it would be clear that the for sentencing purposes is not a limitation that applies to the prosecutors. I have no objection to including a documented request component. If it's requested electronically, it's going to be documented just by the electronic trail that is left, which I think is a good idea. If we get into requiring any kind of a paper documentation, a formal paper request process, then I think it gets much more cumbersome and resource intensive, and I think it would end up becoming and not nearly as quick. I think it would be more problematic.
Mr. Brown?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, I think as I explained before, there already is the BCA documentation in the request. The reason I would encourage you not to put those words into this amendment is that if you turn the page to R22, you'll see that criminal justice agencies doing hiring have the ability to do this without a court order. And that, I think, it means the exact same thing it does to us. You have to do a document, that is, there's a paper trail request already in that process. If you add words to the amendment we're offering that are different than here, the BCA may well think that also means a paper document, and the whole point of this was to make it streamlined. So I leave that to you for your consideration. Would encourage you not to include that, with the understanding that the goal of that we have a paper trail or an audit trail is already encompassed in the BCA process. Thank you.
Representative Champion.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm of the opinion that as long as we understand that there needs to be a documented trail so that folks are able to see the request and that it just can't happen by telephone, I'm okay with whatever decision this committee makes. And if the documented request notion is already embedded in this whole notion of without a court order and it's already a part of that, then I'm okay. But if not, and I would always opt to just be comfortable so anybody who's reading it, like a layperson, I would want them to know that there's a documented request that would have to take place as opposed to just a telephone call, because most lay people don't know that. And so I would like to fall on the side of the ordinary person and maybe adding the language, not just here, but throughout the document, just so that it's consistent.
Why would it matter if it's documented or undocumented?
When you think in terms of, Madam Chair, when you think in terms of, those who are really wanting to make sure that data that is requested on people is well documented and tracked, and that the subject of the data can always go and know that their information has been asked for. Or
who has asked for the information?
Yeah.
So track record, who has asked for their information?
Absolutely.
Okay. Governor Abel?
Well, just that you could even have a little clause that not in the paper, could be like, just to clarify, so they don't change anything. There's already some method of tracking if you don't want to. That might give comfort to there is some merit in looking at
it. I have a question, Madam Chair. Is there anyone who can answer under the current system, which is required as stated, but I don't know how it's done electronically, is there somehow that information is going to be hidden? Or how are we not going to know? Because from what I understand now, we're going to know based on how it's done.
Madam Chair, Representative Lesh, I'm going to toss that over to Mr. Brown, who's just talking about the current system and how do we know that it's not being, held in secret, those sort of things.
Mr. Brown?
And I apologize, Madam Chair. I was working out some language issues with counsel and did not hear the question clearly, so I'm sorry.
I'll rephrase it better, too. Thank you, Madam Chair. Is there some loophole under the current system by which this information would remain hidden, the request? I mean, because I assume that information now is available through a request. Is that correct? Or can be available?
Mr. Brown?
If I'm understanding the question correctly, Representative Lesh, what the prosecution gets now, if we put a request into the BCA for a record and there is an expunged record there, the only information we get back is the existence of a sealed record. What it does not tell us is whether that was because there was an arrest that never resulted in anything. It doesn't tell us if there was an arrest and a charge, and there was never anything. It doesn't tell us if the person actually was convicted and later got an expungement. So all we see is sealed record. The purpose of getting this access here is there's a streamlined process for the diversion and now a streamlined process for getting access to that information.
Madam Chair?
So if we're going to have more sealed records after this bill and licensing needs to be part of this bill, would a licensing board be able to get access to the sealed record, like, say, the chiropractic board? Because that's one of the controversial issues that have come up lately.
That I can't, Madam Chair, Representative Hillstrom, that I can't speak to.
And just for, Madam Chair, just for clarity around the question that Representative Lesh asked, right now, if the prosecution wanted to go and look at someone's sealed record, they would have to get an ex parte order, and that ex parte order becomes public. And so the subject or anyone will know that there's a court order that allowed for this record to be viewed. And so what the constituent was really getting to was around the fact that if this is just done now electronically, if I'm the subject of a inquiry, how would I know that someone's asked to look at my record?
But, okay, thank you, Madam Chair. The existence of that electronic request, that's the thrust of my question, is public, right? The existence of the electronic request submitted?
Madam Chair, Representative Lesh, I do not have the answer to that question. I don't know.
Okay, and Madam Chair, I think the gist of it is that we want to know who's checking up on us is the thrust of this, right?
Right.
Okay. So if, in fact, the electronic record is public, I see no reason to add on another paper request, because I know who's going to have to be doing those requests. It's going to be me sitting down scratching that stuff out, and I know there's going to be, you know, 3 pages in triplicate or something. So if there's a way that it can be achieved in the same way, that's important to me. And if we don't know now, well, that's important to know that too.
Well, Madam Chair and Representative Lesh, we can commit to trying to find out the answer to that question, but as we sit here right now, I can't say with any real authority or conviction what the answer is, but I'm committed to find it out.
All right. Any further discussions? Ms. Backus, why don't you read the compromise language for us?
Madam Chair, members, it's on page R21. The House side, the right side, on line 16.14, strike prosecution, comma, or sentencing. I can't see if that's a comma. But
comma.
Yeah. And then add a new clause, which would be clause 2, and we'd have to renumber the remaining clauses. And that new clause would read clause 2, an expunged record may be opened upon request by a prosecutor, comma, or a probation officer for sentencing purposes, comma, without a court order. Semicolon.
Representative Lesh?
I would move that language, Madam Chair.
Further discussion?
Madam Chair, just
Senator
a thought. I think Mr. Brown had included upon request in the separate clause relating to probation officer. It might be just a drafting question. If that's redundant, it's not necessary. Mm-hmm.
Madam Chair, and Senator Latz, that's correct. That was a suggestion of House Counsel to make it clear that the sentencing purposes restriction was for the probation officers. It was a clarifying.
So it was intentional to not include upon request.
Yes.
In second subclause. Okay.
Madam Chair, through the gavels in your hands, are you comfortable that, I mean, this is not my topic, but the new vice chair concern about the document part, be it electronic or otherwise, is that covered by insurance, or is that something we're going to work on later, or is it not the only one?
I thought Mr. Brown had answered that question, that in this section it was embedded there, that it was documented.
Mm-hmm.
So
there, well.
On Representative Lesh's motion, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
I was supposed to say no. Motion prevails. Representative Lesh moves section House language, section 8, as amended. Any discussions? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
I was supposed to say no. Motion prevails. So Ms. Paris and or Ms. Backus, can you walk us through the rest of the other sections of the bill relating to this decision that we just made with this amendment? Representative Lesh, is that all right?
Yes.
Because I think that was a critical issue. Once we've adopted that, we can go and adopt all the other provisions. So. Ms.
Madam Chair, just so I understand, this would be the remainder of Representative Champion's House Bill 891?
Yes.
Okay. We start on page R18. Section 17 and 18 on the Senate side. Can you
open hold? Just hold. We're going to take this vote and we'll come.
You got a roll.
Yeah. Ms. Pierce, I'm sorry, can you repeat that?
On page R18 on the Senate side, section 17 and 18 are identical. And And also on page R20 of the Senate side, it would be lines 20.3 and 20.4. And then I believe that's it. Mr. Backus is in agreement with me.
So Representative Lesh moves adoption of those sections as read by Ms. Carius.
Can we just hear again now the changes that we made, the affected by that last amendment? Why is it that these sections become identical? Can I get that explanation? Because I didn't follow that.
Ms. Carius?
Madam Chair and Representative Lesh, Section 17 and Section 18 are part of House File 891. Those two sections are identical, and they're on the general register. The provision I've read in Section 20 is also on the general register on the House, and then we've just adopted the new changes. So that would include
the language
all
is all identical. There were some concerns about modifying that section. We did the amendment to take rid of the problematic section.
Okay.
So now we're just moving to adopt the rest of the other identical language.
Okay.
Right?
Okay.
Representative Lesh moves that those sections. Any further discussion? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed say nay. We failed. We're just going to go vote, and we'll be right back. The Conference Committee on the Senate File 2790 will come back to order. Representative Lesh, I think that there are several provisions that are outstanding. The several sections with respect to the Moore-Mullery bill, I think we are at a conclusion that I think that bill will just be moved separately. And then we have left remaining, I think, Senate Section 1, Senate Section 8, Senate Section 14, and Senate Section 28. Senate Section 1, I believe, is the education, is Senator Dill's amendment on education. Senator Dill, just for the record, do you want to report to us on your conversation with Representative Riley?
Yes, Madam Chair, members, I took Representative Hillstrom's advice and went downstairs and talked to Representative Riley. And we both agreed that I would try to put it on one of Senator Stump's bills, which you'll see him in Conference Committee, and they can see what they can do about it.
Okay.
So I'll pass on moving that section.
And then Section 8 of the bill, I understand that it was removed from the vehicle bill or the M-line bill because of some concerns, so I want to be respectful of that conversation. So that we don't spend a lot of time on it if that was problematic.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Now we're at to Section 14, Senate Section 14.
Madam Chair.
Representative Lesh.
Senate Section 14, I appreciate Senator Dill's effort in doing this. I have some sympathies in doing it, and I appreciate the amount of information that he brought to bear also on this, some of which I did not see, which I think is relevant and pertinent. Although I see 24 states on here, I'd be interested as to where the other ones are as well. That said, I know there's no way I can make this fly on the House side if this were to be in, and so I can't move this, and I know I don't have support from all of my House colleagues either.
Senator Dell?
Well, Madam Chair, Representative Lesh, the reason there's only 24 states listed there is because the others had a different system, different age categories, and different ways of doing it. And I had a complete list of all 50 states, and it was just hard to compare some states to other states because they didn't use the same age. The 13 to 16 is kind of an age category that we're dealing with. So to make it a fair comparison, I winnowed out the ones that had a different way of looking at it. that 2020, but if you want to see the 26 states, I'm happy to provide that documentation to you. But at any rate, I am disappointed that you don't want to give it a shot anyway. We still have almost 2 weeks left of the session. And it would be, I think, educational to have a debate in the House floor and also to at least have a glimmer of hope that it might still pass.
Well, let me.
It can't pass unless one tries.
If I can, Senator, Madam Chair, Senator Dill, I have given it a try. I actually offered a similar amendment to a separate bill at a different location. It actually ended up in tax committee because for different reasons. Yeah, that's how outrageous and radical I am on it. But I'm absolutely willing to work with you in exploring the options for this. But I think that a debate on the House floor is worthwhile. But I know I myself even want to hear a lot more in committee for this to go through. I'd be willing to work with you on some other areas, but on this bill itself, where with no companion on the House side, I can't bring myself to go back to the House floor with this provision.
Well, Madam Chair, I'd like to still make the motion to include it in the conference committee report, so I can report back to my Senate district and my editor and the local paper that, in fact, it was voted down by the House. And frankly, I'd rather let the governor, if he's going to veto it, I'd rather blame the governor than the House. Anyway, Madam Chair, I'd like to move Section 14.
Senator Dill moves adoption of Section 14 of the Senate language. Any further discussions? All those in favor?
Can I just say one thing?
Yes, Senator Dill.
I think you need to think about the kids out there that are thinking about suicide when they get in this kind of a situation, and those that probably have already killed themselves or will be killing themselves because we're destroying their lives by having this outrageous regulation in state law. And it's disappointing to me that we can't at least move this forward and give it a crack, give it a chance.
Any further discussions on the motion? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed say no.
No.
The motion does not prevail. And the only remaining section, I believe, is Section 28.
I would move the House language, Madam Chair. The Senate language, Madam Chair.
Representative Lesh moves Senate Section 28. Any discussions? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed say no. Mr. Backus and Ms. Pierce, does that wrap up?
One more thing, Madam Chair.
Yes,
as long as
Senator,
these people don't have any doggone guts on this, I'm going to go back on this Neely Bradley thing, and I want to move Section 1 so you people over there can vote against even education for those kids out there. They don't even know about this two-year rule. And to screw around here, sending me down there to see Mindy Deason's, Mindy Greiling, and this idea of having a fiscal note on something so darn simple, you can't tell the kids if they're more than 2 years difference in their girlfriend or boyfriend, you could be in deep trouble, have a felony conviction, registered sex offender for the rest of your life. You can't be a chiropractor, you can't be a racetrack jockey. You can't be all kinds of things. So, Madam Chair, I want to move Section 1, and let's listen to this House vote against even education to let our citizens know what the rules are in a very serious situation.
Members, Senator Dill has been a long time advocate supporter of Second Chance, and we all know that he's been kind of the Lone Ranger voice in the other pocket, in the other side of the aisle when he's kind of on this issue. He's retiring. And so I felt very strongly, and I gave my full support for him to put the amendment in this. But I want Senator Dill to know that, you know, that around this table, all of us are with you on what you want to do. The votes today may not reflect that, but I know that Representative Abler and Representative Hillstrom, with Lesh, Senator Lass, and I will continue to do this work. I mean, we're not going to let the Romeo Juliet issue go just because, you know, we don't have an opportunity to work on it as well. And I agree with you. I think that Section 1 should become law. And so depending on what the vote is today for this committee, I'm going to work with you in the remaining time in this legislative session to see what we can do in Section 1.
And just, I thought you were done. And just to help you out, I was reading this a little more carefully. And Senator Dill, this is a state responsibility that you're giving the commission. I serve on the Education Policy Committee and the Finance Committee. And if something the commission really likes to do on their own that they kind of thought of and they can kind of fit it in, they have lost a ton of staff. And there's every bill that's been kind of lately has reduced state administrative, you know, function. Should this go on, there will be a fiscal note of some denomination. This is a policy bill with no fiscal implication. Our education bill is coming up soon.
Friday.
So you do have a Senate position on this, just to tell you. So with a Senate position, this could be matched up already in the education omnibus as a position, which would be on some of the boards, but at least there's a position there, and the pocket change you would take to put this together, $100,000 or less, pocket change, but could be found if there was a will, especially on the part of the Senate side, which has some strong interest in Senator Moran. And on the House, I think that this would be something that we're taking up. And so whether you vote on it now, I don't think the idea will stop. I think however this side votes, if they don't accept it, it's because of the process of where it sits in a bill that's a crime bill and with no fiscal. So your frustration on this matter matches my frustration on about 16 other matters that we are stuck on, including one of the last version of the bill that we've got forward to.
Sure.
Just to encourage you, so whether you vote now or not, if you feel, I think we can carry it forward and stuff like that.
Thank you, Madam
Chair. And Senator Dill, I always vote 100% for comprehensive sex ed. I'm telling students everything. So we can take the vote, and I can vote no, but then I'm on record, and I have no reason to vote yes if it should come up as an amendment on the House floor to the education bill. So take it as you will.
Representative Lesh.
If I can, and I, Senator Dill, I appreciate your frustration because of the way things go down around here. My first question when I saw these two sections in the bill when they weren't in the House side of it as well was what's going on with the Republican caucus in my body, because I know I'm going to have to deal with them on all kinds of things when it comes back in a Council Committee report. For me, I've already been on record with this, with both your provisions. I've been on record as in favor of them the whole time. But I'm relying on the fact that in your conversation, which I think was the appropriate time to have it, with Chair Dreiling, that it will go through on that side, which is why I think that's the efficiency sometimes we have to rely on around here, even if it's not cut and dried A to B to C. So I'll be voting no today, but I appreciate, understand, and respect your position and hope it does come through in the way that has been arranged prior to this vote.
Senator Dill, I think that Representative Gilson makes a strong point, which is if we vote this down, we might lose the vote for amendments on the House floor. We still wish to move forward with the motion.
Well, I didn't really, Madam Chair, I didn't really fully understand what Representative Holstrom said. She says she's 100% for sex ed, and I am too. I see nothing wrong with teaching reproductive biology to our population base. Just part of who we are and the way things work and the way the next generation shows up. And we just, there's nothing wrong with reproductive biology and all the other aspects to it. But I didn't quite catch what the reason was. If you voted no today, I don't understand why that would affect a future vote. Is that what you were saying?
Well,
Representative Hillstrom.
Thank you, Madam Chair. If I need to go on record today as being against this, I'm not a person who likes to flip-flop my vote and have folks use those kinds of things against me in the future, Senator Dill. I would be voting no today because Senator or Representative Dreiling has said to me this is comprehensive sex ed and it belongs in the education bill, where it belongs. But I don't need to be, you know, caught in the boat today and then caught in the boat. Do you know what I mean? You're angry. You're upset because we didn't accept your other provision. I understand that. You're frustrated. We get frustrated a lot because we can't get comprehensive sex ed past the House many times. But I just...
You know what I've done in my 24 years? I've always tried to vote on how I thought it was best for my state and my district. And I didn't worry about the political stuff and this flip-flop business or somebody taking some piece of some big bill that I voted for or against and say I voted for or against this little piece of it and never worried about it. But I can understand that there's other people in districts that are not so DFL or so Republican, you've got to withstand this kind of campaign business. So I amended Senate rules with the help of Bill Luther a few years ago, and there's a section in our Senate rules that say that it is not appropriate and it's against our rules for a member of the Senate to send out press releases that distort a member's voting record on any public policy issue. And I don't have the whole thing memorized right now, but I was getting at this idea of distorting votes.
We don't have that rule
like
in the House. We don't have that rule in the House, unfortunately.
Well, I noticed that. I checked your rules. You don't.
We don't. I wish. So, Senator Dill, I would commit to you to offering this as an amendment on the House floor to the education bill with the consent of Mindy Grove.
You know, the trouble with that is then you get all these Republicans that notice it. and somebody's better to put it someplace where it's not noticed so much.
Well, you make that decision.
Yeah. Well, Chair, at the risk of working in a stealthy way, you already have a Senate position. And with the concurrence of Senator Stump and others, it could be brought to the Education Committee because it's germane to that bill. It's an education matter. Mm-hmm. And so if we brought in outlier bills into this and make it more than these two bills. All right, that's
some routine
meeting. That would be the way to do it.
Okay, Madam Chair, okay, I noticed you said that earlier, and you said it a second time now, and I understand it, and I think you're right. So, and since since we're all going to leave your friends, I'll just withdraw my motion.
Thank you.
And I'm not going to be here next year, but I wish somebody would fix this problem.
And we'll do it. Okay. Thank you. I think our work is complete on this. What would you like to do? It's probably going to take at least a day or two for the conference committee report to come together. So why don't we play by ear, and when the conference committee report is finished, we'll put out the call and. Let's just reconvene so that we can kind of go through it once more, and then everybody can take some more. Is that agreeable to you?
That sounds good to me, Madam Chair.
I'd rather do that so that we can move the entire conference committee report, because we've taken different pieces. So that's all right. Let's do that. All right? Thank you all so much for your good work. We stand adjourned.